Hi everyone, I'm Heather, one of the Youth Services Librarians here at Crow Mayne Library, and today I am joined by Eric, our Adult Services Librarian, for another nostalgia read in this week, year, time session. This session, we decided to read the classic, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, by Judy Blume. So, Eric, had you ever read this one before?
I had never read this title before, and I'm relatively sure I've never read a Judy Blume book before. Although she was absolutely delightful as the keynote speaker for the ALA conference that just happened in June, so I was actually looking forward to reading it because she was so funny and so witty, and I loved it.
I'm big time jealous that she was the speaker at ALA. That sounds really, really awesome. I had read this one before. I feel like it is a tween book for girls that was often read in the 80s and 90s. So yes, I actually remember reading this one with my mom. We would do read alouds together, like chapter by chapter. And I feel like it was right around fifth grade that we read this one, which checks out pretty well.
Yeah, I remember Judy Blume being like outrageously popular among like the girls in my class in probably elementary and maybe a little bit in middle school. So like I definitely was aware of Judy Blume and know some of the names of her books, but I'm just pretty sure I never actually read one myself.
Yeah, absolutely. She was just like a staple author. So we'll dive right into to the cover of the book. So there's been so many covers throughout the years. Which cover did you have and what did you think about it?
So the cover I had, I'm relatively sure this must be like, oh, actually, yeah, I definitely know because there's a little purple heart that says now a major motion picture. So I think this is like a brand new cover because there was the movie that just came out, I think earlier this year or maybe last year. It's just like a baby blue cover with a little girl like scratching her ankle or something, and it just says the title in script. It's kind of boring. If I'm being honest, I'm looking at the Google images and I feel like the one I remember was very 80s and probably much more descriptive about the book because it's like three little girls in a room definitely look like they're having some kind of girl talk moment. Very 80s.
Yeah, I think the very 80s cover is the one I read originally that it's probably floating around in my parents' basement somewhere. I read the one, well, I mean, I read the book, they're all the same, but the cover was the one where it's a tween girl kind of looking up at the sky and there's like clouds behind her. And I feel like honestly, that was a pretty good representation of what the book was about. So I liked the cover. I thought it was really cute.
Yeah, I see that one now.
Yeah.
There's like two very 80s covers. There's another one that is actually this maybe is even more 70s that has like that weird green color that was like pervasive in the 70s with that like kind of fancy-ish font. And it's like a hand-drawn little blonde girl standing behind like a flower bush in front of a house, just like looking off into space, I guess. But like more towards the camera, not like up into the sky, but just like not looking at the reader somehow.
Yeah, I really like that cover, honestly. This is one of those cases where I feel like the original cover is the
Yeah.
one I like best, which is surprising because 70s art doesn't tend to appeal to me. Don't come at me, it's just a preference. But yeah, I really like this color or the cover and the colors and just kind of the design scheme on the original.
Agreed. Mine is almost like too sanitized. You know, I don't know if you can see the one that I'm looking at with like the sky blue cover and the little girl just like touching her ankle or kind of, I don't even know what she's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, it's a cute cover, but I don't feel like it really kind of tells you what the book is about. Like, I don't know. The other ones evoke the actual like world of the book a little bit more, but
Yeah,
that one looks like it might just be like a summer vacation kind of read.
like the 80s is definitely because there's a couple scenes of these girls like they meet in their club, which I'm sure we'll get to talking. So the 80s one especially, but at least the one you read and this original 70s cover, she looks thoughtful. The book I read, it just looks like she maybe stepped in something or has an itch on her leg.
That is exactly it. That's exactly what it looks like. All right. So, just for a quick overview synopsis of the book, I'm pulling this from goodreads.com. And it says Margaret Simon, almost 12, likes long hair, tuna fish, the smell of rain, and things that are pink. She just moved from New York City to Farbrook, New Jersey, and is anxious to fit in with her new friends, Nancy, Gretchen, and Jamie. When they form a secret club to talk about private subjects like boys, bras, and getting their first periods, Margaret is happy to belong. But none of them can believe Margaret doesn't have religion and that she isn't going to the Y or the Jewish Community Center. What they don't know is Margaret has her own very special relationship with God. She can talk to God about everything. Family, friends, even Moose Freed, her secret crush. Margaret is funny and real, and her thoughts and feelings are oh so relatable. You'll feel like she's talking right to you, sharing her secrets with a friend.
Fair enough.
So, like, I feel like that's pretty accurate to just the whole premise of the book. Like, that's one of the better synopsis I've
Yeah.
read.
The only small note I have is that there's that little line about she can talk to God about anything, which almost makes it sound like there would be conversations with God, which, I mean, I guess there are, but there's no back and forth. It's just her, like, literally the title of the book, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And then her, kind of telling God her problems or whatever.
Yeah, and I gotta say to that point too, so I read this, when I was a tween as well. And despite the title being Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, I didn't at all remember like the religious conflict that she had going on. I remembered more about like the period talk and that sort of thing. So I was actually genuinely surprised by some of the insights that she was making. And I definitely wonder how modern readers, like what they take away from it. Is it more of like her feelings about religion? Are they grappling more with like periods and growing up, that sort of thing? I'm very curious.
It's really interesting because this book tackles or tries to tackle so many issues. In like a very little, this book is 200 pages, but I feel like it's less than the page count because each chapter is so short. And then, if you have a short chapter, there's like obviously like a bunch of half pages. So there might only be like 120 pages of content or something. And it covers a lot of ground. So my assumption going in was this was going to be more about religion and less of like a coming of age story or something, which I guess is probably kind of what it is, like a slice of life for a tween.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I feel like it was more of just like a slice of life kind of thing. And that was just really surprising to me because again, that wasn't what I remembered or took away from it as a tween.
I
But
kind of
yeah.
assumed it would be a girl going through more of a tragedy, just based on like the prayer aspect of it. I just assumed, oh, something bad must happen to this girl or have happened, and she's like turning to God for help with whatever. Plus, I know it was like a banned book, so I expected there to be something really controversial in it. And I guess, I didn't really get that.
Yeah, and of course there were some aspects of homophobia and fat shaming throughout. The only, like you were saying too, one of the things I think folks might have thought was controversial were maybe the party scene, which we'll get into later, and possibly just Margaret at one point just saying like she doesn't even believe in God. And like when this was published, I could totally see that being like a big
Yeah,
issue.
or maybe just like a book for tweens that features menstruation so heavily,
Oh,
or
yeah, that too.
conversations about it. There's a bunch of stuff that I'm like, I guess maybe, but really? We're kind of like my attitude. I was waiting this whole book for something like crazy to happen, and it kind of never does, I guess.
Yeah, it really was just like a slice of life kind of thing going through just going through a tween's life. So I don't know, maybe that was why it was so problematic, was it was just very realistic to what the tween experience was, at least back in like the 70s, 80s, and 90s. All right. Are you ready to dive into the plot?
I'm ready. Yeah.
All right. Oh, I forgot to ask you, first of all, were you invested like right away, or did it take you a
You
little bit
know,
to like
I
warm up to
honestly
him?
was mostly because, like, the very first paragraph, which I can read, I didn't realize this had like a personal connection to me. So the first paragraph, it starts with one of her little, like, I don't know if I would call them prayers, but a conversation with God or whatever you would call it. Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. We're moving today. I'm so scared, God. I've never lived anywhere but here. Suppose I hate my new school. Suppose everybody there hates me. Please help me, God. Don't let New Jersey be too horrible. Thank you. And as we know, because I bring it up all the time, I'm from New Jersey. So I was immediately like, oh my God, I had no idea. People from New Jersey are not all horrible usually.
Yeah, that made me laugh out loud, and I was like, oh yay, Eric's gonna be so happy this
I
is
was so happy. And
the
then
end of
I don't know, it's probably the first character, or sorry, the first like page or two, they introduce a character whose name is
Jersey.
Nancy Wheeler, and everyone knows how much I love Stranger Things. So I was like, oh my God, I wonder if that was intentional. And I almost went down a rabbit hole to Google if the Duffers did that intentionally, but I did not and still have not.
I love that you mentioned that too, because so that was chapter two where we were introduced to Nancy Wheeler. And even though I knew like the main character's name was Margaret, I was like, oh my gosh, wouldn't it be hilarious if her name was Barbara?
I had
And
that same thought.
the mom's name was Barbara. Coincidence? I
I
don't
don't
think so.
know. Those duffers, those crafty duffers, leaving us Easter eggs.
Yeah, but I loved that so much. And I feel like that actually really puts you kind of in the time period as well, which is probably why I originally thought this was written in the 80s, but I'm pretty sure it was written in the 70s.
I think I saw 1970 in the copyright date, which surprised me because this book does a really good job of like not seeming out of place today, at least to me.
Oh,
I
yeah,
think there
I
were a
totally
couple
agree.
like probably off the cuff old tech things, like she plays a record player really loud at one point. But other than that, like it seemed, you know, fairly current. There wasn't a whole lot in there to be like, this is so out of touch.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I'm really understanding why they turned it into a movie, which I haven't seen yet, but it really does translate pretty well to the tween experience. You know, it's not exactly the same
Yeah.
now as it was back then, but like a lot of it probably still rings true, at least from conversations I hear
And I
from the
brought up
kids.
a record player, but like vinyl is huge again now. So I guess it's not even really
Exactly.
that out of date on that front.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we're set in New Jersey, and we quickly discover that Margaret is an only child. She wasn't at all consulted about the move, and her parents have a contentious relationship with her grandmother, Sylvia, who also lives in New York City. And I know part of the reason they think, or Margaret thinks they moved to New Jersey is they kind of want her to get like away from her grandmother's influence. Then we meet Nancy Wheeler. She just randomly rings the doorbell and introduces herself. And I wrote in my notes, I'm gonna pretend it's Nancy Wheeler from Stranger Things. One of the weird things was we discover Nancy Wheeler wants to be in Playboy, and
So
14-year-old
weird.
boys are disgusting.
I mean, that is accurate, though.
So that could also have been why it was considered like problematic or like a banned or challenged book as well, because it's like, huh,
They
that's
mentioned
interesting just right off
Playboy
the cuff.
several times in this book, which I was like, yeah, my dad has a Playboy subscription. I'm like, really? Was that common in the 80s? I don't know.
I don't think so. Like I kind of feel like even back then that was something you kept hidden.
Yeah,
So
he probably read it for the articles.
oh, I'm sure, 100%. Yeah. So 14-year-old boys are disgusting. They end up going to Nancy's house to run through the sprinklers, and there's this weird scene where like Margaret is changing into a bathing suit, and Nancy's like watching her change. And just right away, I knew I wasn't going to like Nancy very much because I could already tell she was very like judgmental and just not a good friend.
If there was a sequel to this, I don't think they're still friends at some point in high school. I think she seems like a definitely like a Regina George type mean girl, Nancy.
Yeah, it's funny because I kept thinking of Mean Girls a lot while I was reading this. So I think there were a lot of cultural like influences on culture that may or may not have been derived by this, or it was just so like so much a part of so many girls in particular childhood experiences that they
Oh my
kind of like
God. And
adapted.
one of their names is Gretchen.
Yeah. And then progression wieners.
Yeah, so these are like proto middle school mean girls, I think. Mean girls in
Absolutely.
training.
Margaret reveals that she keeps her chats with God private as she doesn't want her parents to think she's a quote religious fanatic, which I thought was really interesting because a lot of the times, especially in the time this was written, it's usually your parents that are like pushing a religion on you. So I just thought that was interesting that she was kind of keeping it on the DL. Not that she didn't have a religion, but that she was like in communication with God and that sort of thing. So then we've got Margaret's dad, who apparently is completely like inept because he's a city boy. And the first time he mows the lawn, he has an accident and cuts his hand. So he has to go to the hospital. And then grandma shows up to see Margaret.
It didn't
That
work.
scene.
You can't keep grandma away. That's just, we knew that was going to fail.
And I know like they thought it was like she wasn't going to come because buses are dirty and like all this stuff. And she's like, I don't care. I'm still coming to see my granddaughter. And I was like, that's such a grandma thing to
Power
do.
move, grandma. Way to go. Just shows up one morning. That was one of my favorite little scenes because Margaret's just awake and both her parents are sleeping, and grandma just shows up on the front door. And she has to go wake her parents up, and they're like, no, wait, she's not really here, right? And then they're both very surprised.
Like, yeah, grandma knows about buses, and even if
Yeah.
it's not her favorite, she's still gonna do it. There was a couple of instances of old tech in this chapter. This is chapter three we're on now. They refer to a house phone and a phone book, and then it's my dime, which was alluding that grandma was using a dime on the pay phone, which I don't know if young readers would know about that. Like, I think they could probably figure it out from the context
Context
clues, but
clues, yeah.
yeah, but the my dime might kind of trip them up. Like, what do you mean my dime? Like, all right, so we're in chapter four. The first day of school arrives and the kids meet their teacher. There's a funny interaction with Margaret and her mom regarding blisters because the girls or Nancy tells Margaret that none of the sixth grade girls wear socks with their loafers, and her mom is like, you're gonna get blisters if you don't wear socks. And sure enough, like she gets blisters, and she was like, I really should have listened to my mom. Like,
Yeah. I mean that's advice for everyone. Just listen to your mom, people.
yeah, sometimes mom doesn't want you to make the same mistakes that she did. So maybe, you know, take that into consideration. So chapter five starts the official secret club. The four girls have their first secret club meeting and settle on the name SBTs, Super Preteens. They each take on a different name and each comes up with a rule. They have to wear a bra. They have to tell everyone in the group when they get their period. They have to rank boys on a list and they have to set a recurring meeting once a week.
And on Wednesdays, they wear pink.
Exactly. Margaret tells her mom she wants to get a bra, and she has some religious identity struggles in that she doesn't know if she wants to be Christian or she wants to be Jewish because her dad is Jewish and her mom was raised Christian. So their secret club just kind of cracked me up because, yes, I feel like, first of all, it's like a prototype of a sorority kind of vibe. They're like, oh, we can only like do this and that. And it's like, I do remember having secret clubs with my friends because of course you do, but
Duh.
these were definitely not the rules.
No.
Yeah. I don't know, Eric, did your friends like force you
We
to wear a
didn't have
bra
any
to the secret
rules.
meeting?
Yeah, no. I think we always wanted, like, little boys just always wanted like a clubhouse. And then, you know, you'd make this place or have like somebody has a tree house or a tent in the woods. I lived in the middle of the woods. And it was just like, okay, now what do we do? I guess we'll just do the same stuff we always did, like play Nintendo or baseball or whatever. Like there was no rules.
Yeah,
It was
same
weird.
for us. Yeah, I feel like me and my best friend, she was another girl. I think we picked secret pen pal names when we were writing notes to each other in school. But that was kind of it. Otherwise, we were doing a lot of like imaginative play or like playing sports. Yeah, like clubhouse kind of stuff was definitely our jam as well. But yeah, we didn't really care about like bras and ranking boys or anything like
No.
that. Maybe we were the rarity, maybe we were the exception, but I don't know. So in the next chapter, Margaret and her mom go bra shopping, and it is mortifying. This chapter was like really, really accurate too. It is completely embarrassing to go shopping with your mom for your first bra, and they're like measuring you and stuff. It's just humiliating. Her grandma also gets she and Margaret a subscription to an art center. And then Margaret runs into one of her classmates while bra shopping.
Of course.
Yeah, you
I
just pretend
definitely
like you don't see each other.
I remember like those middle school. These are like a little younger than middle school, but close enough where it was like I remember going places with my parents and you were old enough where you didn't want to be with your parents, but like not old enough to get anywhere by yourself that was like out of bike range and just like totally pretending your parents didn't exist or pretending you didn't see the other person because there was no way to do that. And just like having those awkward, like, you know, locking eyes and just that silent agreement, like, we're just not going to talk about this.
Exactly. That really just harkened back to just the reality of the situation, and I think that's still something that like tweens can relate to. I know one of our coworkers has been talking about how her son is like an official teen now, and he's going through this like, oh mom, you're so not cool thing, and it's like it's just so typical to the tween experience. So
Yeah.
yeah, I felt squirmy during the scene with Margaret and her mom. All right, so in chapter 7, the first meeting of the club occurs. All of the girls are wearing a grow ball bra, a grow bra, which I've never heard of, but that's okay.
I was wondering
Aside
if that was
from,
a real thing.
as far as I know, it's not, but I mean, maybe I've blocked a lot of
Is
that
it
out
like
at this point.
a sports bra? Like it just has some elasticity? I still don't know anything about bras, so
Fair, Eric, that you don't. Like, I remember, let's do a deep dive, but like we used to like the prototype kind of bras, they were really just like soft cottony kind of things. So I don't know. I don't remember it being called a grow bra, like that it would grow with you, but maybe that is a thing.
it sounds like an ingenious invention to me.
Right? I agree. It sounds like science fiction. But everyone is wearing a grow bra aside from Nancy, or Alexandra is her secret name, who is a 32
Ugh.
double A in bras. They share the boys they like, and everyone's top pick is Philip Leroy. The next
Spoiler
scene,
alert.
yeah,
Horrible person.
horrible person, absolutely dreadful person. The next scene cuts to school where the kids are pranking Mr. Benedict by cheeping like birds around the class. And then
Taking a
he,
test without putting their names on it.
I know that was like the
Like
littlest thing ever. It's like, oh my gosh. So because they were doing this, he ends up redoing the seating chart, and she meaning Margaret, ends up sitting next to Laura, who is the girl in class who has like the bad reputation because she's more developed than the other sixth graders. And then they decide to not put their names on their tests, and Margaret talks to God about growing boobs.
Laura's been wearing a bra since fourth grade, and she goes behind the A and P with Evan. So, what's her name's brother? Nancy's
Nancy's
brother
brother? Yeah.
and Moose, or at least that's what Nancy says. But as we'll find out, Nancy might not be the most reliable person to listen to.
Yeah, she might be kind of a jerk,
Yeah.
actually. Yeah, I felt so bad for Laura throughout this because it also, again, just harkened back to my middle school experience, and I was thinking of like specific people from my classes. I don't know if they were like facing these kind of things because they were more developed, but I could totally see that being like a jealousy thing that other girls were like kind of putting on them. I didn't really notice that kind of stuff. I was just kind of in my own little like world doing my thing. I feel very lucky and privileged that I didn't notice that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, it's definitely weird because as a boy, like I was bigger than average when I was a kid, and that changed at some point in high school, but like it was cool to be one of the taller, bigger boys. But I definitely remember there being like girls being very catty with like the one girl who was always taller than everybody. So it was almost like the opposite. Like as a girl, you didn't want to stand out in that way. But as a boy, like, I don't know if it was just, looking like more of an older person was cooler as a boy or something, or maybe boys were like afraid of you because you were bigger earlier than like your fellow classmates. I don't know. It was just like, it was in the 80s when everyone was idolizing like the Schwarzeneggers and Stallone. So maybe that was like part of it at that age in that time, like being bigger as a boy was cooler. I do remember that being a thing where there was like one girl who was as tall as some of the taller boys in like fifth grade, and she was like definitely not treated kindly by her fellow female classmates.
I like the way you worded that too, because it did harken back to sometimes people would get jealous of girls who they thought were like extremely pretty. There would be like some stuff going on there. And also, just wanting to blend in, a lot of the people at school would dress in the same uniform. So in middle school, I moved from Melvindale to Allen Park. And in Melvindale, we didn't really care about like designer brands or whatever. It was just a very different like social class sort of thing. But in Allen Park, it was all about like Abercrombie and Aeropostale and American Eagle. Like that sort of thing was the uniform, and you didn't really want to stand out. I personally didn't care because, again, I moved in eighth grade. So it was, I think, because I spent time in a school where that wasn't like the main thing. That wasn't part of my personal struggle, but it totally was for my classmates. Like it was totally part of like who was popular and who was not, and who like was cool and who wasn't, like that sort of thing. I totally forgot about that until just now.
Yeah, I grew up in an area that was like I would liken it to like a Novi, like upper middle class, but we were definitely pretty poor. So that was like your Allen Park experience was very much like mine, except I did care and we couldn't afford that kind of
Oh.
thing. So it was like, yeah.
That's a
Yeah.
bummer. Our big currency in Melvindale was those starter jackets. Do you remember the starter jackets? And we all liked the Charlotte Hornets for some reason.
Everyone loved the Charlotte Hornets in the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah. Was
I
it just the
actually,
colors?
I don't know. I had a Notre Dame one because my grandma got it for me for Christmas one year. And like, I didn't even like Notre Dame. I think at the time I was a Notre Dame fan, but yeah. And it was like the coolest, most expensive thing I owned. And I almost got in a fight because somebody wanted to take it from me. Like, one of the popular
Absolutely.
kids was like, give me your coat. And I just couldn't
Nope.
do it.
Oh, it's cold in New Jersey.
It's pretty cold, yeah.
Yeah, leave me alone. Go get your own starter jacket.
Yeah.
All right. So, as guest, getting back into the book, Mr. Benedict figures out the proper names of the tests that they didn't sign, and Margaret is delighted that she got a 98%. I should note too here that she goes along with not putting her name on the sheets, but she's really not happy about doing it
He
because
spent so much
she,
time studying the night before.
yeah, absolutely. And it's like, Margaret, just go with that feeling. But I know, like in middle school, you don't want to stand
There's
out
so
and you
much
don't want to be
pressure.
the
Yeah.
one. Yeah, so I'm glad that it resolved itself for her. She ponders her like yearly project more that Mr. Benedict assigned, and asks God if she should choose religion to focus on. So she takes the bus to the city, and Margaret's mom tells her to sit next to a lady, not a man, and let her know if she gets lost, and she'll help her. This is very authentic to a tween and teen girl experience as well, even now. Which makes me sad, but that's always the thing. And it's like, I think that's even still told to teenagers and like young adults. Like, if someone's bothering you in public, go find someone who looks like a woman that's a little bit older than you, who looks kind of like they have that maternal energy. They'll pretend either they're your mom or your best friend or something like that. And it's true. It's like a girl code kind of unspoken thing between us, but we like to keep each other safe. So I thought that was really interesting that that was in the text.
Yeah, I was reading the scene and I was like, I don't know if it's sad or how I feel about the fact that I can't even imagine anyone in this day and age allowing an 11-year-old to travel on a bus. And did she have to also take a train to meet her grandma or something?
Yeah, I
Like
think
alone.
so.
I can't imagine that being a thing that many parents would allow to happen. But it
Yeah,
definitely
I
was.
totally
Like when I was
agree.
a kid, I know that me and my friends would take the train into New York City every now and then in high school, so a couple of years older, but.
Yeah, it was the same for us too. Like, we would just kind of run the neighborhood. We didn't really have buses and that kind of stuff. But, like, even now, I don't think the kids that live in my old neighborhood are like running the neighborhood by themselves. I just don't think
Yeah.
that's what's happening there. So, she eventually meets up with her grandma and tells her she'd like to go to temple with her, which absolutely delights her grandmother, but makes her parents very angry. And they decide she's going to go on Rosh Hashanah, which is the Jewish New Year. She heads back to New York in brand new clothes for temple. And then she enjoys the music, but doesn't really understand much of the sermon. So she ends up counting hats of people in the temple. And then she meets the rabbi. And when she goes home, her parents asked her what she learned. Her response was how many hats there were. And she and her dad had like a good laugh about that because he was like, yeah, I used to count feathers in the hats.
It's so true because I used to do that to distract myself in church.
Yeah,
I count
absolutely.
different random things that I could to just zone out.
Because you have to. It's just a lot for a kid like to have to listen to. And
Yeah.
especially when it's in Hebrew and you don't know any Hebrew, that makes it difficult.
Well, and when you're that age, like, I don't know, at least in my church, I think we stopped going to Sunday school in sixth grade or after sixth grade because then we had to do, I was raised Lutheran, so it's a little different than Catholic. But we do our confirmation classes starting in seventh grade. So, like, that was the point where you had to stop and, like, just stay through the whole church service. And for, like, a 12-year-old kid, that's, I don't know, sitting through those sermons was, I didn't understand what was going on, despite being in Sunday school for like the last 6 or 7 or 8 years or whatever it was. Like, it's hard to keep your focus. And I know my pastor had like these 20 to 30 minute long sermons, which is just sitting there listening to anyone talk about anything for 20 or 30 minutes, especially when you're 12 and you're hyperactive, was like torture. There's just no way I was going to make it through that. And I think most kids that age can't just like, don't have that attention span to listen to someone drone on for that long, no matter what the subject is.
Yeah, that's completely true too. I was raised Catholic, so our catechism took place on like Mondays or Tuesdays, and we went until eighth grade. So we were confirmed in eighth grade and then baptized in first grade. No, not baptized. We were something else in first grade. I can't think of the term. First communion. We did our first communion in first
Yeah.
grade. So we actually sat through the sermons on Sundays too. And I guess the good thing about it was we knew it was only going to be an hour because Catholic masses, they're always about the same time, plus or minus like 5 minutes. So like you knew like once you were through this and this and this thing, you were almost done. You had almost made it, but we were not allowed to act up in church. It was okay if like our minds were kind of drifting as long as we were being quiet. That was our thing. But it was a lot for a little kid to handle.
Yeah, up until 7th grade, they would we'd be there for the first half of the service, and then they would do like a little children's sermon, about halfway through, which is like 3 minutes of the pastor doing whatever, and then you would go to Sunday school for the rest of the service. But yeah, then after that in 7th grade, and we had to do worship reports, which was like a book report about the sermon, and
Whoa.
it was a lot. It was like homework for church because our confirmation classes were on, I don't remember what day of the week they were, but like, yeah, it was basically like having to go to church 2 days a week.
Wow. I didn't have to write any reports. I'm very thankful for
Yeah.
that. So Margaret tells God she'll know her true religion before the end of sixth grade. That's like her goal for her sixth grade year. The next chapter opens with Laura wearing a sweater to school, and it causes just a complete commotion for the class because, again, she's more fully developed. So people have like things to say, which, oh, was just making me so upset, like for her. It was just making me so mad. Lots of weird and gross comments from Nancy saying basically that Mr. Benedict had a crush on Laura. Like, so there was some child predator vibe she was trying to like instill, and I did not like that either. So then Margaret ends up asking Janie if she can go to church with her, and they go. She said it was just like temple, only in English, and she tells God she didn't feel anything special. She also finds out the sixth grade classes are set to have a Thanksgiving square dance, and of course, all the girls want to dance with Philip. Margaret asks God if Philip will dance with her and discusses how happy she is her mom isn't chaperoning. She gets to dance with him eventually, and she is so pumped about it.
And Nancy, so yeah, the square dance guy, the I don't know what you would call the square dance caller, Nancy's supposed to dance with him, and then for whatever reason he like makes people change up partners, and Nancy is almost like in tears because she didn't get to dance with Philip.
I thought that was hilarious, but also kind of true. I too was kind of surprised that they actually wanted to dance with their crushes because from what I remember from middle school is you just kind of like giggled about it from afar. You didn't want to actually like talk to the person you
Yeah.
had a crush on.
This was very true to life for me because in 5th grade we had to learn how to square dance, and I had the biggest crush on this girl, Katie Burke, and I didn't realize until years later that like the music teacher made us partners on purpose because apparently everybody in 5th grade knew that I had a crush on Katie Burke, including probably her. But yeah.
Oh, that's adorable. And teachers totally do that. Like, I love that. Oh, little
Yeah,
Eric
little
getting set
Eric.
up.
I
Yeah.
wonder whatever happened to her.
Yeah. It's hard to know.
Who
Shout out
knows?
to Katie if you're hearing this. Hey. So by December, the girls aren't using secret names anymore. Or the boy books because they all like Philip. And Margaret thinks it's because they're embarrassed to reveal their real crushes, just like she is. They look at male anatomy in a book, then grab Margaret's dad's Playboy to see the cover model is 18. I am completely grossed out by
Gross.
that. Yeah. And then the meeting ends with the we must increase our bust chant.
I
Which
know that from, I don't know if that was in an 80s movie or something, because I was like, I know this from somewhere and I've never read this book, but I don't know what that could be from. But I remember that chant.
I that was the part of the book I remembered, honestly, and I was laughing. I remember laughing so hard as a fifth grader, like, what are these girls But yeah, it must have just sent Ben in a movie, like as a callback to this book.
So that was one of the things that came off as very true to life to me, just because there were so many dumb things you believe as a child who's like waiting for puberty to happen. And like just those dumb things. I don't remember anything specifically as a little boy that like I would have done to try to like make puberty happen. But there were all of these urban legends, and I got a kick out of, I don't remember what chapter it's in, but Margaret saying something like, you know, they have like a, they have to watch a movie about becoming a woman, and she says something like, why do they wait until we already know everything about becoming a woman or something, when in reality they're doing all of these silly things based on like urban legends to try to like make puberty happen.
Yeah,
And it's like
stop
you
trying to
think
make puberty happen. It isn't gonna
it's
happen.
not gonna happen. So many Mean Girls references. But yeah, like I remember feeling that way as a little boy, like, and you're talking about, oh, this something happened to this person or this thing happened, and you're just waiting and hoping like there's nothing wrong with you and doing some stupid like urban legend kind of thing to like make fetch happen.
Yes.
But also fully believing like you know everything about puberty and what's going to happen to you and just being so lost.
Yeah, you really do think you know everything in middle school, and then the older you get, the more you realize you don't know anything, like at all. I wish I had that same knowledge that I had in middle school. Like, I know
I
everything.
wish I had that same confidence that I knew everything.
Right.
Now I'm like, I don't know anything. And I
Yeah,
never feel like
literally.
I know anything.
At
But back then I
least
was like,
doing
I
best we
am so
can.
smart and I know the world.
I don't know why parents think I need supervision. Like, I am fine.
I haven't burned down the house yet.
Exactly. Yeah, and just the video thing, I 100% remember I don't know if it was a video we watched or if it was just like a lecture that the health teacher did in fifth grade. And I didn't want puberty to start because I knew it was going to be terrible based on the lecture.
Really sounds like it would have been terrible for girls, especially. I
Yeah.
remember fifth grade, in my school district at the time, in fifth grade, they separated the girls and boys. So in fifth grade, you only got your own like genders thing. But I remember watching this horrible video, like a VHS tape, and I just remember the voice of like the narrator was like, your body's changing, and it had this like weird soundtrack behind it, and I'll never forget that dumb video, like just that one part of it where I was like, what is this? And we were all just laughing the whole time because we were so immature and uncomfortable with like the diagrams of the male anatomy and having to label everything and being like, what is this? Why do I
Yeah,
have to know what a vas deferens is?
even in high school, when we did like the reproductive system in our anatomy class, I feel like we were still so immature. We were like laughing about it then too. Which just it makes me laugh thinking about it because it's like we really did think we were so grown in like sixth grade and especially in high school, and it's like, and we're still laughing about like this.
Yeah, I still remember Mr. O'Donnell standing in front of the whole fifth grade boys class and being like, okay, we might as well get it out now. I'm going to say the word, you know, penis. And like, we all just laughed. He was like, okay, maybe now we can laugh less. And we didn't, but I admired his attempt. I love that
And
guy.
I gotta say too, that just reminded me, this might signal growth and more comfort with one's body because at a program recently that I hosted, there's like a dodgeball kind of component of it. And one of the boys yelled, "Ah, you hit me in the penis." It just was like, oh my God. And it's like, you know, I'm glad you're using anatomically correct language. However, can we not?
Can we not just scream that out, please?
Yeah, that would be really, really awesome. But yeah, that just kind of cracked me up, and it reminded me of that. All right, so they send Grandma off on her annual cruise and her preparation for death. because she had promised Margaret her jewelry. It very much reminded me of my own grandmother, who also has her funeral planned, the song she wants sung, the song she wants to be carried out by the pallbearers too, in addition to the jewelry that's like going to me. So that just rang very true for me. And then they caught back to Margaret at school, and the class is practicing songs for the Hanukkah Christmas choir concert that's coming up. And two kids say it's against their religion either to sing Hanukkah songs or to sing Christmas songs. And then Margaret discovers that her mom sends her other grandparents a holiday card, and she tells God that she's going to reflect on both Christmas and Hanukkah throughout the holiday season. So then Margaret and her whole class get invited to a supper party, which that's kind of a dated thing, I feel like, because I think now it's just a party. Like, do you want to come to my party?
I
So
had no idea what that was.
I
It's
didn't
like, what's a
either.
supper party?
Yeah, and it's like, oh, they're eating like food. They're eating dinner. That makes sense.
Poor Norman Fishbine. Is it Norman?
Norman.
Yeah, I knew
Yes.
someone with the last name Fishbine, so I could remember that name. But
Nice.
I was just like, they keep calling him a drip, and I'm like, why? He's just a kid. Like,
Right.
why
Right.
is. And he's not in the book otherwise, really, besides like a mention at the dance or whatever. They just call him a drip, and I'm like, but why is this kid like not cool or a drip, as they would say?
Yeah, I don't know. Probably just because middle school. Because
Yeah, I
middle school.
guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And that the name Fishbine kept making me think of Bob's Burgers. Is it Mr. Fish Odor on
I've
Bob's
never seen
Burgers?
it.
What? Oh my
People
gosh.
tell me I
It's,
would love it, but I've never seen it.
yeah, it's a triumph. You have to watch it. But anyway, it was reminding me of, I'm pretty sure it was Bob's Burgers, like one of the names on there I kept thinking of. So yeah. Poor Norman. He's just trying to like invite people to his party. Margaret stuffs her bra and talks to God again about making her boobs grow. And then the kids go to the supper party, and of course they get into shenanigans. Norman's mom is not happy about said shenanigans involving food and threatens to call parents. I believe there was an incident where one of the boys had some mustard in a straw and shot it up at the ceiling.
It was everyone's favorite Philip Leroy.
Yeah, oh, of course.
But then
Yeah.
everybody else started like spitting mustard at the ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah, reminded me of like spitballs like in class that you threw at the ceiling.
Or like that one kid who, when you had a substitute, would always like try to get a pencil stuck in the ceiling of the school.
Yes. And sometimes would succeed.
And it would just be there for weeks.
Yeah. We love that. And I feel like the mom was using like, your behavior is abominable. Like it was really funny, and her language was making the kids laugh. The kids play Spin the Bottle and 2 Minutes in Heaven. Margaret is partnered with Philip, who kisses her on the mouth, which was wild. There was some homophobia in this chapter too. It was very subtle, but it was like boys will kiss girls and girls will kiss boys, that kind of thing. Which wouldn't fly today. Like if this had been written today, it would have just been like whoever it lands on, that's who you're kissing. So yeah, that party was something else. And I felt like that was more of like an 8th or 9th grade party. I was surprised that they're only in 6th grade, like having this
Yeah.
party.
I feel like if I was in sixth grade and someone wanted to play Spin the Bottle, I'd be like, ew, gross.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. So the next chapter starts with Gretchen getting her period. Woohoo!
She
Her
got it.
mom does fat shame her about watching her calories now that she is becoming a woman. And Nancy is super mad that she didn't get her period first. But oh, shock and disbelief, she gets it shortly thereafter. Margaret talks to God about how jealous she is that she has not had her period yet, which again is just not relatable for me because I did not want my period. I still don't want my period. It is not fun. So, I mean,
I'm
but I
very
guess,
thankful to not have to worry about that.
yeah, and like I know it's like a part of womanhood and that kind of stuff, and she's so focused on like her physical development. Like, I understand why she'd be jealous, but also it's like, girlfriend. Don't worry about
Not worth it. Yeah.
it. Yeah.
Growing up, just a lot of, in a lot of ways, is not worth it. In many ways, a very rewarding experience. In a lot of ways, sometimes I still wish I was 10 and
100%.
didn't have to worry about anything.
Yep. And not trying to grow up so quickly when like you get to spend your whole life as an adult. So don't
Yeah.
worry about it.
Not that being 10 is easy. I'm not like devaluing, you know, the
Oh
fears
yeah.
and the worries that you have as a 10-year-old, but like, man, just not having to pay bills would be
I
really great.
know. And like having to survive, like it's all
Having
on
to
you.
actually, worry about my survival.
Yeah, it's rough. Margaret writes her grandmother letters and discovers her grandmother met a man. So that was the big thing in chapter 16. And then in 17, Margaret goes to NYC with Nancy and her family, and Nancy starts her period for the first time. So she lied about starting her period. Margaret tells God how angry she is that Nancy lied to her, and we find out that Margaret has a crush on Moose. And yeah, I'm glad that Margaret actually did get mad at Nancy for that too, because I feel like that rang true too. And Nancy was trying to be like, yeah, I was just blah blah, and it's like, no, you lied, and you made
Yeah.
me feel really bad because I wasn't at the same like rate as you. So chapter 18, it's Margaret's birthday. She's pumped to get a plane ticket to Florida, but is devastated when groups are assigned, and she ends up in a group with Philip, Laura, and Norman the Drip. Philip is rude to her, and we find out Margaret is very jealous of Laura, of her development. So, which checks out, I feel like that would be why they were throwing so much hate at her. And then our old tech alert here was they were listening again to the record album Mice Men.
And they were going to the library to look through like physical encyclopedias. That might be a different chapter, but at some point during this project, like they go to the library and they're looking through world book encyclopedias and stuff. I just thought that was adorable.
Yeah, it was literally the very next part they were doing that. And then Margaret actually ends up picking on Laura while they're researching because they're the only ones that are really doing any work for this group project. And Laura says she's going to confession. Margaret ends up following Laura to confession to try it out. But she ends up running out when the priest begins talking to her. And then she tells her mom she's sick, and she asks God why she can only feel him when she's alone. So I feel like that's like just something kind of subtle about the religious experience as well. Like she wants to kind of be like everybody else and get that kind of feeling of peace from either temple or church, but it's just not working for her that way.
I felt so bad for Laura, like the whole
Me
book, but especially
too.
in that scene when, you know, she finally tells Margaret, like, do you think it's easy being me? Like, people are always talking about me just because I'm bigger and just because I've had to wear a bra since I was in fourth grade and nobody else does. And like, this is actually awful and I hate it.
Yeah.
And like, I really liked that Margaret kind of took that in and listened and was like, you know, I never thought about that, which is so true. I think for a lot of, I mean, people in general just, you know, are not empathetic enough and don't like think about what other people are actually going through and maybe why they are the way they are. Not that Laura actually seemed to ever behave problematically,
Yeah.
but just, you know, thinking about the values or whatever that we assign to other people and how that affects them, especially at those ages, which are like hard enough to begin with, but then having a reputation that is kind of unfairly earned. You know, I thought that was really interesting to actually include that in a tween book in that time.
Yeah, I really liked that as well. And it's one of the reasons I feel like this book holds up so well, and it is kind of considered like a teen classic, is it really does kind of put you in someone else's shoes. And I love too that like Laura directly called Margaret out for that as well, because a lot of times in middle school, the people getting picked on aren't brave enough to do that. So hopefully it empowered some of the kids who were getting picked on as well to like stand up to the bullies and just be like, hey, you know, how do you think I feel when you're saying this kind of stuff? Do, 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 do. All right, so in chapter 20, The family gets a letter back from the mom's parents saying they'd like to see Margaret and Barbara. So again, Stranger Things reference, but they're coming when Margaret should be in Florida. So her trip gets canceled and she is not happy at all. She rants to God about how unfair that is, which I agree with her,
I
honestly.
agreed with it. I don't know that we talked about her grandmother's or her grandparents on her mother's side have been estranged her entire life because they didn't like that their daughter was marrying a Jewish person, which is absolutely horrible. And then even in their letter that they respond to their Christmas card with, they say something like, they don't even own it, like, we made a mistake and we're sorry. They say, we're wondering if we made a mistake. And it's like, no, you absolutely did.
Yeah, 100%. And the letter also says that they want to see Margaret and Barbara, but not Margaret's dad.
And he is justifiably upset about it.
As he should be. And I feel like that anger is like completely justified. I'm surprised Barbara still went through with the meeting, particularly because it meant that Margaret had to cancel this trip that she was really, really looking forward to.
Yeah, I
But
can't place myself in Barbara's shoes because I've never been estranged from my parents or even like particularly angry at them, other than like normal teenage, like, my parents aren't cool. Why can't I do these dumb things that you know they're not letting me do because I don't realize they're stupid at the time. But like, I don't know, it just seems like that apology probably would not be enough for me. We're wondering if we made a mistake by like abandoning you for at least 12 years or whatever. Like,
Instead of like, it's been hard to speak with you because we know we made such a mistake and we want to start
and
making
we're, yeah,
amends.
we're embarrassed about how we behaved. It wasn't worth it to like lose our daughter, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I totally agree. But I can also see it from like Barbara's perspective in that it's like, of course, like if your parents are extending an olive branch, like I
Yeah.
would imagine it's probably very hard to be estranged from your parents. So of course you're gonna like want to try it again. You
Yeah.
know, the
Yeah.
glutton for punishment kind of thing. But yeah, it's just a sad situation. And I feel like even if she had said like, this is not a good time for you to come, can you maybe come in a couple of months or something and we'll have
Yeah.
things squared away, would
Yeah,
have
I would
made more
have
sense.
much more empathized with her decision there instead of like just bowing down because her parents say outright, we're coming to New York. We hope you let us see you.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like, when can we come? Or like they were totally dictating all of the terms of this reconciliation and not even admitting that they made a mistake
Yeah,
fully.
absolutely. So the grandparents arrive, and Barbara makes a really fancy dinner and hires a cleaning lady to help. And I guess I kind of assumed throughout that Margaret's family was more of like a middle class family. I don't know like the demographics for Firebrook, but it was just so casually like, oh, and she hired a cleaning
Not
lady
a real
to
place.
help. Yeah.
As I googled, I was like, I don't know that I've ever heard of Farbrook. I wonder
Oh,
where
it's
they
not
are.
real.
Yeah, it's not real.
Gotcha. But yeah, that just kind of surprised me how it was so like casual. Like, oh yeah, she just hired someone to help clean. Like, oh okay, because that's normal. It's totally normal. Grandma ends up bringing up Sunday school, and when Margaret says she doesn't go, it causes a huge fight. And then this is where Margaret vows never to talk to God again. Margaret and her friend, I can't remember which friend, end up going to a drugstore and they buy pads. And her friend is like really nervous about this for some reason, which I get. So like they buy something really random too, like a toothbrush or a comb or
Yeah.
something. So it
A
looked like they were
pocket comb, a purple
shopping.
pocket comb. But
Yeah,
then they
and
still
like
don't buy it because there's a boy at the register.
yeah, and it's like I actually do totally get that because it was always really embarrassing to like have to buy sanitary products as a teen. You know, as an adult, like you don't care anymore,
Just
but
is
as a
what it
teen, it's
is,
like,
yeah.
oh yeah. And I thought that was funny too because they wanted to like menstruate so badly, and it's like, well, you're buying the products and you're embarrassed.
I did like how savvy the girls were because when they watched the like puberty video in their little thing, they were all like, I'm not buying this brand because this video is just a commercial. And I definitely remember those kinds of videos where it was basically like, yeah, it was educational, but it was a commercial for whatever product like they wanted you to buy. In this case, it was like feminine hygiene products. It was like, I never want to buy this brand because kids are smarter than advertisers think they are. And it's like really demeaning sometimes.
Yeah, they really, really are so much smarter than they're giving credit for sure. So Margaret and her parents find out that her grandparents are heading to New York, which, yeah, that was kind of the whole, that was the whole gist of them like seeing her. And then Margaret's grandma that she loves makes a surprise visit from Florida. Grandma says they came to run interference with the other grandparents, but then she gets upset when Margaret says she doesn't believe in God after Grandma says she's a Jewish girl. And I feel like this is also really authentic as well, because especially when you have a family who are very like stringent in their beliefs. I think at first Grandma Sylvia was like, oh yeah, victory. It's because like you're a Jewish girl and you want to practice Judaism. And she's like, no, actually, I hate everything and I don't want to practice anything. And I thought that was really interesting, but like really relatable for a lot of kids as well. And again, I was surprised to see it in a book like from the 70s. Just because of the other things that were going on culturally at the time.
I thought it was interesting how similar in that respect both sets of grandparents were. They were both just like pushing their religion onto this like child. But how much more, I don't know, empathy I had for the one because she was like also involved in her granddaughter's life. And yes, obviously wanted her to be Jewish, but had many more redeeming qualities about like legitimately caring for this child as well. Whereas the other ones were, you know, very not easy to root for.
Absolutely. I had more sympathy towards Sylvia as well, because parts of her really remind me of one of my grandmothers as well. I feel lucky in that my grandma isn't, we talk about religion sometimes, but she's not like pushy about it. So and both of my families were from the same religion. So I think that might have helped the vibe a bit more. But I was like, oh, Sylvia, come on. Like you were doing so well. So in chapter 24, Margaret writes a letter to complete her assignment, and she says it's too hard to choose a religion. When she sees everyone else has huge booklets, she turns in her letter and then like runs out of the classroom crying. And Mr. Benedict is kind of like trying to follow her down the hall, I would imagine, to like reassure her that it was okay. But she just doesn't want anything to do with it. And we don't find out how that situation resolved. As the book concludes with a gift being presented to Mr. Benedict on behalf of the sixth grade class, a confrontation with Moose about the lore rumors, and Margaret's first period. And at the end of the book, she finally starts talking to God again, which I thought was really interesting. Like she did on her own terms. So yeah, and that was how it wrapped. The last chapter when Mr. Benedict was saying like, oh, I'll definitely never forget this class. Like you guys have made me a seasoned professional in so many ways. And I was like, yeah, total first year
First
teacher
year of
vibes.
teaching is rough.
But I was surprised at how well this one held up. I wasn't invested right from the beginning, but like as the book went on and she was really grappling with like religion and she was kind of seeing Nancy in particular as the mean girl that she is and kind of like standing up to her. I found I was really vibing with it more and I'm understanding very much why this is considered like a teen classic that still gets handed down.
I agree. I think I covered it before, but it felt like the female version of what I experienced as a boy, like waiting for puberty, all the uncertainty, all of the insecurity, and all of the people saying, like, such and such happened to me, you know, the male equivalents of what the girls were doing in this book. You know, just waiting and somebody else says they experienced this thing. this kind of like landmark of puberty, and you're like, well, I haven't yet. Is there something wrong with me? God, I hope I'm not a weirdo or whatever. A lot of that rang very true to life for me. So I was wondering, like, it's good to hear from you that that was also a similar kind of vibe, I guess, of female experience at that age.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And even some of like the conversations the girls were having, it's similar to what I hear like tweens talking about. It's not so much about their bodies anymore, probably because there's like the internet, so they can look up a lot of things on their own, but just even friendship dynamics and just kind of like mean girl behavior and how they kind of all want to be like alike and similar. That was something that really resonated with me as well. I think this is one I would recommend to modern kids, which surprised me, but it makes sense because they just made a movie about it too. So.
Yeah, I think this is probably the oldest book we've read for this podcast, but it's probably the one that seems to me to be most applicable, I guess, to today's kids.
Yeah, it's kind of like timeless in that way. Like people do still deal with estrangement from family and like family infighting and weird dynamics with their friends and like pranking teachers. Like that, it's just very authentic in that way.
I will say, I don't know that teenage boys might resonate with them because just because of like, I think me reading it as like a 40-year-old man, like can look back and be like, okay, this is very analogous. It's not exactly the same, obviously, because I didn't deal with any of those same issues, but I can draw the parallels. I'm not sure a teenage boy would have the maturity or like the introspection, and I don't want to sell them short because maybe some of them would, but I think it's harder for teenage boys to get past some of those differences and reflect on their own experiences.
Because it wouldn't be considered like quote unquote manly, you know, to do that kind of stuff. Is there like a teenage boy equivalent kind of book to this one?
Not that I remember. I definitely wasn't into this kind of literature when I was even a teenager. I was already all about Stephen King and like
Me too.
horror books. So I didn't read any kind of like coming of age things unless I had to read them in middle school, and I just don't remember.
Yeah, even as a youth librarian, I can't really think of one that's like specifically about puberty for boys. Like there's some, of course, like dealing with the middle school experience and that sort of thing. But I feel like girls, honestly, they like our girls at least that come in here, they tend to look for more of the like realistic fiction and like things that'll give them feelings. And a lot of the boys want like dystopias and horror and just like funny books and graphic novels and that sort of thing. So yeah, I can't think of a boy equivalent for this one either. There are some cool ones though coming out like in graphic novel form, for example. One I can think of, it's just Consent. So it teaches kids about consent, which I think is really important for folks of any and all genders to learn about too, just to make sure that they're respecting themselves and respecting other people as well. But yeah, I'm gonna do like a deep dive and see if I can find a boy one. I'll let you know if I do. There's another girl one that's really cool. It's called The Moon Within, and I can't remember what country it's set in, but when a girl gets her period, it's like this big celebration kind of thing. And I just loved that one. I remember when I read it, I was like, oh, this is like a modern day Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. But honestly, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret is kind of a modern day Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret too, just with like some slightly, you know, just some little picky things here and there. Pretty awesome. All right, so on a scale, let's just do the overall scale. On a scale of 1 to 5, what do you think that you would rate this?
I think I really enjoyed it. I would probably have no problem giving it a 4 or 5.
That's awesome. So, my rating's kind of funny. I think mine averaged out to 3 because, like, when I first started, I was like, oh, this is a 1 or 2. Like, I was kind of getting Sweet Valley kind of vibes. But then toward the end, I was more of like a 4 or 5 as well. So I think I land right in the middle, as a 3, just because I thought some parts were stronger than others.
Yeah.
Did you have any other thoughts you want to share? Holy cow, we've been talking for a long time.
Yeah. I think I've articulated most of my thoughts, probably more well than I'm used
Awesome.
to doing. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
You did awesome, Eric. Well done. All right, so that wraps up this month's podcast. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.